Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Do you think the life of a traveling salesperson is so hard now? Well, just check out what Billy Crudup encounters on Hello Tomorrow, Apple TV Plus's new dramedy that started earlier today. Co-creators Amit Bhalla and Lucas Jensen join me next in an internet radio exclusive. A pair of Lifetime true crime-inspired original movies premiere tomorrow and next Saturday night, respectively. Both were written and executive produced by Connor Allen and Benjamin Anderson, and you'll hear them after the bottom of the hour from Los Angeles. Also ahead, stars and MGM Plus bundle up, Stone Cold's new TV journey, our classic trivia question, and it's time to cut Super Bowl pregame shows down to size. Really, that's the takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Block Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presenting the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us on this TGIF afternoon, you and all. It is 49 degrees, top of the hour here in the Big Apple. Happy you're with us for the program all about TV's current and future. We're going to jump right in. We have a great hour in store for you, and it gets even better when you give us a call with your questions or feedback for our guests. Just pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Chat room is open for business, too. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Those will be live with you. Hello tomorrow, co-creators, executive producers, Amit Bhalla and Lucas Jensen. Join us live from Brooklyn, Nueva York, after these news notes. Prime Video is going ahead with a new bundle option among its customer base. The deal takes Starz and MGM Plus, formerly Epix, together for $11.99 a month. That's 20% less than the combined price of both services on a separate basis. The Prime Video pairing may be the first of several Starz will overtake and undertake in the next coming months, according to officials at the Lionsgate-run paid channel. One more aside, the option applies only at this point to Prime Video's U.S. customers. Former WWE superstar Stone Cold Steve Austin comes back to the TV series universe this spring. On Stone Cold Takes on America, Austin gets into his RV and travels cross-country, accepting a challenge from a fan or fans at each stop. A&E Network will start the series April 30th, right after the Season 2 premiere of WWE's Most Wanted Treasures. Austin's last unscripted TV project, Straight Up Steve Austin, ran two seasons on USA Network, the first in 2019, the second 2 years later. And two quickies for you. Molly Yale will continue her Food Network activities on a new two-year contract. First up, more episodes of Girl Meets Farm Sunday morning. And Discovery Channel's new Naked and Afraid spinoff, series known as Solo, begins on March 12th. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Brooklyn, Nueva York, in an internet radio exclusive, the co-creative executive producer of Apple TV Plus' new scripted series starring Emmy winner Billy Crudup that premiered earlier today, Hello Tomorrow. I'm Amit Bhalla and Lucas Jensen. Amit and Lucas, congratulations and welcome to our program. And hold on for 1 second. They're on the line and should be up momentarily.
Hey,
there
thank
we go.
You very much.
Amit, Lucas, welcome in.
Hey, oh, wonderful to be here. Thanks for having us.
It is a pleasure. Congratulations on your series. And Amit, we'll start with you. What inspired it?
Oh, you know, we've loved Salesmen for a very long time. You know, that goes to Arthur Miller and Death of a Salesman. That goes to the Maisel Brothers documentary, Salesmen. And you know, we've always kind of seen Salesmen as the priest of the American dream, you know. And then we found our way into this setting a show in a defunct American dream from the mid-century, you know, this world that we call retrofuturism.
Mm-hmm. Lucas, a number of the critics who reviewed the show have mentioned Death of a Salesman as an inspiration for it. And I understand that you had a screening of Hello Tomorrow here in New York on Wednesday, and you told Variety in a story that was that came out, I think it was late yesterday, early today, you said, and I quote, "These days, we're all salesmen, and anybody who denies that isn't looking in the mirror." What do you expand that for a second?
Well, you know, it's not necessarily a happy condition, but we only chew so much of our faith. These days, as we've all put our personalities online, or even just as the dictates of, our hyper-cranked incarnation of capitalism start to drive their way deeper into our lives, you know, we're always all selling. I can't believe, you know, how much selling one has to do. It's not too dissimilar, you know, selling someone a house on the moon and trying to sell a TV show onto the air. There's a lot of, hey, it's going to be great, just you wait. But I think that, you know, one of the reasons the character of Jack Billings is going to resonate is because people out there know that their lives are subject to their talents as salesmen. And here we all are trying to put together something for ourselves and our families, and our dignity is on the line, our futures are on the line, and goddamn, I think we're all selling to make it.
Mm-hmm. And amidst this is the road to getting this show on Apple TV Plus had to be a long one, because the announcement of this series was nearly 2 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's credit to the people over at Apple, but making an original show this year in this kind of atmosphere is very difficult and takes a lot of faith. After that, there was, the attachment of Billy. Making the show took a while with COVID and all, so it was a mountain to climb up. There's no doubt about that. But we wrote the show with a good inspiration from a good friend of ours, Ryan Khalil, our producer on it, and you know, we had nothing attached to it. So it's been a long shot, a moonshot since the beginning.
But it also speaks, to Apple's commitment on this to go into the world at that level of detail. I mean, when you watch the show, every one of those costumes is handmade. Every one of those, modern conveniences, the appliances or gadgets, are all practically made. You know, we wanted to create a world that had a grain of reality, even though it was something that obviously is a dream, is completely unreal, and that's been the great joy of making this, as long as the process has gone.
What do both of you think about the viewer reaction and the critical reaction so far? I know it's only a few hours into the first three episodes running on Apple TV Plus, but what are you hearing from out there?
You know, I think we're thrilled to see the show getting the attention it deserves, and Billy getting the attention it deserves for what really is, a jaw-dropping performance. I mean, this is a role that he was in some ways born to play, not just because of his natural gifts and his look, but his father was a salesman. And his father was a salesman with perhaps more ambition and enthusiasm than he had skill and success. Billy has taken that history and taken that painful past and courageously rolled it into a performance as Jack Billings that is just, it just has you on the edge of your seat from the moment he hits the screen. And gosh, after how hard he's worked and after how dedicated he is to this, to see him getting the recognition that he is due is the greatest possible feeling.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Billy, who was interviewed in the same Variety story, that had your quote, Lucas. He was at that screening on Wednesday here in New York at the Whitby Hotel, by the way, in Midtown Manhattan. And here's what he had to say, and I quote, "It was a wonderful way for me to remember my father and conjure his thoughts, not just playing him, but telling the story of him to people." How much of a Willie Loman was Billy's father to Billy?
A tremendous, tremendous figure in his imagination. From what we can tell, Billy works at a level of depth I think very rare to encounter. He bears his soul for this role, and that goes from the smallest decision he makes. he adjusting a knife and a fork when he sits down at the table was a way that his dad would try and keep control of his present when they're, you know, they were broke and he would leave it, you know, when wives were spinning out of control. And Billy's able to bring that kind of nuance into the performance. And when you're working with somebody like that, with that kind of dedication, I mean, there's no greater gift for writers than to work with performers like we were lucky enough to work with.
We are speaking with the co-creators and executive producers of the new Apple TV Plus dramedy starring Emmy winner Billy Crudup that premiered earlier today, Hello Tomorrow. First three episodes are now running on Apple TV Plus, available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles, and then a new episode the Friday after that. And we are speaking with the co-creators and executive producers, Amit Bala and Lucas Jensen. They're both live from Brooklyn, New York, this hour in an inner radio exclusive right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Robin with you live from New York. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And Willie Loman, Death of a Sales, is not the only influence on this series. There are some very other ones, like The Jetsons, Mad Men, Glengarry Glen Ross, according to one critic, and even Tex Avery cartoons. We'll get to all of that shortly. And I want to let you know that next week we will be on three times. Tuesday, because of President's Day, we normally be on a Monday, so we're going on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And whatever you do on Tuesday, don't miss our lead segment. We think we got a big one for you because it deals with what may be one of the most important developments in television this year, Peacock's introduction of Must Shop TV. It's a way for you and Peacock customers to order products and services on the spot through your television set with your voice-to-voice remote, no second screen, no QR code, no smartphone, no tablet, et cetera, et cetera. And it's starting very, very soon. We will have an exclusive live interview with our lead guest, one of the senior vice presidents of NBC Universal, which runs Peacock, and we'll also be the chief revenue officer of KRV Interactive, the organization that put this interactive app together. Erin Moore and Joy and Jay Wolf, they will be joining us for an interview exclusive interview you will not want to miss. This could be the breakthrough in terms of interactive commerce becoming wide open on television and coming to a TV set near you. Must Shop TV, that's our lead subject Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Stephen Falk, the You're the Worst writer-creator from FX, is also involved with their show. He was featured today on TV's Top 5, the Hollywood Reporter's TV podcast. And here's something he said about the show, and again, I quote, "It's an unholy marriage between the Jetsons and Mad Men. It's a throwback show about hope, imagination, and what happened to optimism in the face of capitalism. It's about the ways in which technology lets us down." And by the way, one of the other critics who reviewed the show said it's an interesting combo of Mad Men meets Glengarry Glen Ross. What do you think about those descriptions, particularly from Stephen, who you work with on the show?
Well, Stephen is a brilliant fellow, and it was a great partner. And, you know, as this was our first show as showrunners, was there every, you know, was there with us to keep our feet on the path, and we're ever so grateful for it. This idea of looking at using humor and using heartbreak and pathos to talk and think about man's, interaction with technology and confrontation with modernity is to us a great part of the American cinematic tradition. And yes, it's the Jetsons, and yes, it's the Tex Avery cartoons you mentioned, and it's also, you know, it's Chaplin stuck in the gears in modern times. That image has birthed a lot of this speculation, and you know, we really hope that the show we've made is part of that lineage. That just asks about the absurdity of our situation as technology has changed our lives. And, you know, even as much as technology may purport to give us everything we've ever wanted, our show lives in the human insistence that there are some problems, some human burdens that even a phenomenal vacuum cannot solve.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you find it ironic that that what the show is saying about technology is being presented on a programming service that is able to go on to viewers through technology innovation, namely smart TV sets and smart TV devices?
Oh, it's highly ironic and amazing, I think, to have these kinds of paradoxes and contradictions brought to the fore. Now, the people at Apple are, you know, they're not dummies. They know what this show's about, and they know that it's a more complicated and nuanced conversation. Technology is a big idea that includes all sorts of things from bombs to medicines, and we like to just wrap it all up. I mean, I think that consumer technology is, I guess, really what we're talking about here. And, you know, I hope that the audience is going to sniff that out, those ironies out, and allow them to inform their viewing of the show. It is funny, but the show's kind of funny like that. So hopefully it resonates a little with the tone.
Lucas, it's very interesting that Billy Crudup came to this with the fact that he wanted to honor his father, with the flaws and all. How did you two sort of shape his character? Because he comes across as this very idealistic, no matter what, I'm plucking luck, I got to sell these shares. Well, we should point out, he's selling shares for people to live on the moon. So how did you take Billy's background with his father and then shape it into the character that we see on the show?
You know, we would talk a lot with Billy and the other actors and our writers about delusion. And we would talk about the power of delusion to warp reality for both the deluded person and the people around them. And how that was, you know, by turns, that could be inspiring, that could be miraculous, that could be heartbreaking, that could be absurd, that could be incredibly perilous. Billy, from the first time he read this script, you know, we knew we had the perfect partner because he said, oh, you know, Jack Billings is not a salesman. He's a preacher. And he's a creature of absolute unshakable faith who believes, even to the level of what others might call delusion, in every promise he makes his customers. And that's a wonderful thing to behold, and it can be a very scary thing to behold too. And Billy has dedicated himself to that principle in the role. It makes for a fascinating performance.
And he comes across too, Amit, as a crusader. Like, you know, I believe so much in what I'm selling, in what I want to offer people. It's like he comes across as Lucas, not only a preacher but a crusader. It's like, you know, come aboard my project. You'll get your life out of it.
I mean, he's an evangelist in that regard, and that is a great tradition in America as well. That's obviously interesting, and that we hope to draw on. But he believes that he can save your life if you have the right thing to look forward to, and if you really believe that, you want to help as many human beings as possible. You can't resist it. Even Shirley in the second episode, you can't save everyone, Jack. Which is to say, she's seen this before. She's seen him make illogical, irrational choices to benefit strangers all day. And that's what he's seen his life as a salesman. So he does take it very seriously. And it is a mission for him. And it's a very complicated one, obviously, too. You know, we're trying to make it not that neat at the end of the day.
Lucas, I mentioned Tex Avery before. And those who don't know, one of the great animators of all time, known for these cartoons, first at Warner Brothers, then at MGM, where the characters were sort of outlandish and all sorts of crazy special effects that were like out of this world and sometimes out of the screen. And Maya Siegel, who's your production designer, said that a lot of what she did to create the unique effects of this world, where you have cars that like above the lane, if you will, and those are things. For example, there's a scene that is inspired by Tex Avery. There's a scene where Billy Crudup it's a very simple scene. He's getting ready to put his tie on, and he puts his tie on, and all of a sudden, the tie snaps together. without him touching the tie. And it sort of reminded me of a Tex Avery cartoon. That would be the kind of thing that Tex would
Straight
out
of a Tex Avery cartoon, almost. I mean, yeah. We loved him. Sorry, you were supposed to.
No, no. You know, one of the things that he understood that we really that jumped out at us is that so many of these things are utterly superfluous. And if not just superfluous, superfluous and, like, don't work great. You know, we tried to write into the script gadgets that would be more or less useless. And even as they were more or less useless, they could even make things worse. But that's such a great joy. And, you know, we had a props department, and obviously Maya did brilliant work too, who was committed to all of these things. We're building them from practically. We're going to go out and we're going to get vintage components. We're going to saw them in half. We're going to weld them together. And we're going to make these sort of ridiculous contraptions. And you know, the hope was from Maya and from us at the outset, and this is true with the robots too. I mean, all those robots are big hunks of heavy metal that are being puppeteered by a brilliant crew of puppeteers. You know, we wanted them all to feel lived in, them all to have rust and grain and to have accumulated a history and be the stuff, you know, to be like the wallpaper in a sense, right? These are the things that everybody has taken for granted, the same way we take, you know, the fact that we drive in a car and not a horse and buggy for granted every time we walk out of the house. So it was a world of outlandish things that we played as, you know, humdrum was the idea. And to us, that gives room to both, you know, comment and spark a little thinking and talking about what the American late capitalist experiment is and how it relates to consumer technology. But it also leaves room for this brilliant cast of actors to be playing stories at the level of the heart, at the level of the human heart in great peril or in great conflict with itself. You know, even while there's a robot shaking a martini in the background, in the foreground, you've got Billy Crudup giving the performance of a lifetime, dealing with, you know, the matters of the human heart. So all of that together is what we think makes this show, you know, unlike anything we've seen, and we're quite proud of it.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk next about some of the other members of the cast, including an Emmy winner and an Oscar nominee. And remember Brockmire, IFC fans? We're going to get to Hank Azaria. He's in this show. He's very good, by the way. And we'll talk about that in a bit. We've got Amit Bhalla and Lucas Jensen, the co-creative executive producer of the new Apple TV Plus series, Hello Tomorrow, which started earlier today. It's available, first three episodes, on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles, and a new episode next Friday and the Fridays after that. Our guests are with us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Avenue live from New York. Thanks for joining us on this Friday afternoon. If you have a guest, a question, or comment on our remaining minutes with our guests, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up for the bottom of the hour, classic trivia question. Last time you're going to hear it, two prizes in play, and they can be yours if you're first with the correct answer. I mentioned some of the members of the cast. Let's talk about Hank Azaria. We all remember what he did with Brockmire and IFC. He was absolutely marvelous. Thought he should have won an Emmy, at least one, for his performance. Loved it. And he's back in this. And I've seen the clips of him. And I'll tell you, I think he delivers another great performance.
It's incredible. Hank is an incredible genius. And he's able to imbue a single line with humor, romance, pathos, all at the same time. We're so grateful to have him in the show. He had such a kind of color to our understanding of salesman as a bigger idea, right? Like, there's the Jack salesman that's in all of our imaginations, but there's also an Eddie in all of our imaginations too. And he's able to portray a kind of desperation that is so necessary for the show to function. I mean, you know, we had working with people like this is a profound privilege. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Lucas, you also have a Oscar nominee, Jackie Weaver. Remember her from serving, she won the Oscar nomination a year or so ago for Silver Linings Playbook. And what kind of role does she play?
Well, Jackie plays Billy's, or Jack Billings' mother, Barbara Billings, who is, you know, in some ways the sharpest tongue in the whole series. And, God, boy, she's fun to write for. The scenes between her and Billy are like heavyweight matches, and the two of them have, you know, a vitriolic relationship that every time it's on the screen, it's funny, it's scary, it's harrowing. But, you know, she's so wonderful to write for because she's capable of an effortless ferocity. But at the same time, you believe it's motivated by a deep affection. And she's always got those layers. And in her relationship with Billy, it's right there, you know, the notion, yes, I'm biting your head off because I care so much about you, is how you keep feeling around her. And she's you know, as always, wonderful and a great pleasure to work with.
So if you get a second season or more from Apple TV Plus to continue, how do you want the saga to continue?
Well, you know, at the risk of giving too much away, by the time you get to episode 10, our characters find themselves in some rather perilous positions. You know, suffice it to say, if you're writing a show where everybody spends all the time looking at the moon and talking about it, sooner or later, you're gonna have to see. You're gonna have to see what it's like up there.
I mean, the world. There's so much more of this world and this story to tell, and so much more of these characters to explore. You know, the half hour is beautiful because it's quick and fast, and you know you can move at a certain pace. But it also doesn't give you the time that an hour does to go deep into these people's stories. And so, you know, it's our deep hope that we, you know, get that runway now to explore. You know, we stay in this little town. There's so much to invent of this world and so much of it that we want to share with an audience. I mean, I hope we get the chance.
And before all is said and done, I mean, final question for you. I know Fly Me to the Moon is used a lot in the opening episodes. Do we get to hear Moon River and other songs of the moon moon motif?
Absolutely.
Down the road?
Oh, you will. You will hear a number of them. And Moon River is one of our favorite songs and is deeply featured in the whole series season.
All alongside a beautiful score by the legendary Mark Mothersbaugh. The music on this was such a pleasure to craft. And, you know, it's no coincidence that all the best songs ever written are about the moon. That is the mother of all of our dreams. That's love itself up there. And you'll hear a number of them on display over the course of these 10 episodes.
And it's great to hear. I did not know this. It's great to hear Mark Mothersbaugh doing the score. I love his work on Rugrats. I think the man's a genius. Any show
Absolutely.
He does, the score for it, he is great. And I'm thrilled that you're working with him. And he's back in television. We missed him a lot.
He's incredible.
Hello Tomorrow, the Apple TV Plus drama that premiered earlier today with Emmy Award winner Billy Crudup starring and as executive producer. It's on right now on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. First three episodes now, and then a new episode starting next Friday, and so on down the line. For more details about the series online, here's where you go, tv.apple.com. It's tv.apple.com. Hello Tomorrow with Billy Crudup, now available on Apple TV Plus. First three episodes now, and more to come. Amit Bhalla and Lucas Jensen, co-creative executives, congratulate the game, the show off the ground. Great reviews and so forth from both viewers and critics alike. It's been great to have you this last half hour, and I hope we do it again soon. And maybe we do it around Emmy Award time, because I have a hunch that this show may very well be an Emmy contender come September.
Well, thank you.
It's been a lot
much.
Of fun. We'd love to do it again.
Whatever.
You got it. Both of you take care. Have a superb weekend.
You too.
Amit Bhalla and Lucas Jensen from Hello Tomorrow joining us live from Brooklyn, New York. Now, before bottom of the hour, let's give you our last look or last listen to our classic trivia question currently. The question is, name a game show hosted by Bobby Vann. Name a game show hosted by Bobby Vann. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win 7 Ways to Become a Famous Doctor, the new best-selling book by America's Health Journal host Roland Perez. That show, by the way, is on PBS. It's also a 24/7 channel available on smart TV sets and devices. And you'll also win the ultimate Petula Clark CD with her great hits from the 60s, from Downtown to I Know a Place, Sign of the Times, My Love, and many, many more. Again, the question, name a game show hosted by Bobby Vann. And there are three possible answers. All we need is one, and you're our next trivia winner. What you got to do is email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and email address. So if you win, we get the prize back to you as soon as possible. If you're a previous winner or a TWBT guest, you are not eligible. Once again, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, Twitter is WBT. So get in the game today, and all the very best. Coming up next, we'll have the executives and writers of two, not one, two Lifetime true crime-centric made-for-TV movies. One premieres tomorrow, the next the following Saturday night. We'll speak with Connor Allen and Benjamin Anderson after we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogs.ray.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love old-time radio, check out Erie House. An episode of the classic The Green Hornet is one of the attractions tonight. 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back for the second half of this Tomorrow Be Televised hour on a Friday afternoon here in New Haven, York. 50 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Simon, I'm with you live from New Haven, York. Good to have you with us. Got more guests coming your way this half hour, plus our takeaway of the week, which we call time for the Super Bowl to cut its ties on big multi-hour pregame shows. I'll explain that near the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guest this half hour, go ahead and make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Once again, we have a pair of guests coming away this half hour, and they're both executive producers and writers of two, not one, two Lifetime true crime-inspired made-for-TV movies, one of which will be taking place tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, called A Rose for Her Grave, The Randy Ross Story. And then the following Saturday night, same time and place, 12 Desperate Hours, which marks the directorial debut of the celebrated and sometimes controversial actress Gina Gershon. Samantha Mathis of Pump of the Ballon fame is one of the stars. And joining us now live from Los Angeles, executive producers and writers Connor Allen and Benjamin Anderson. Connor and Benjamin, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you both. Connor, we'll start with you. How did you two connect to do these made-for-TV movies?
How did we connect with Lifetime or with each other?
Both.
Well, Ben and I were on a bowling league together. Ironically, it was an entertainment bowling league that I didn't realize was an entertainment bowling league. And so we met bowling, and now we're writing TV movies together.
Mm-hmm. And Benjamin, you've got a great deal because one of your movies is on Lifetime tomorrow night, and then next Saturday night you got another one.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's always a privilege when someone gives you the green light and says yes to any project that you're doing, but to do two, you know, or as many as we have been with not only Ann Rule but with Lifetime, it's been such a privilege and a pleasure.
Kind of talk about the there's a couple of connections with both of these films. One is Ann Rule, who wrote the books that you're adapting for these two movies, and the other is that both of them involve domestic violence in one form or another, and they both also involve the role that kids have and how they can be traumatized by events like this.
Yeah. Yeah, we got involved with the Ann Rule series a few years ago. You know, she's the queen of true crime, you know, starting in the 70s, writing about Ted Bundy. And, you know, she brought something really special to the, you know, true crime book medium, which was not only just a female perspective, but she went out of her way to humanize the victims and get into their story. You know, so much of true crime is all about the criminal, the killer, the serial killer, the bad person, and the victims often are just sort of like a bit of an afterthought. And what was really exciting to us and to Lifetime to go down the path of making movies of her books was that it lets you into the story of these people. And so you know, these are true crimes that I tend to focus on the personal aspect, the personal aspect of the victims, who are also sometimes the heroes. In both of these movies, you know, one of the reasons that we were drawn to them was that the even though these people are being victimized, they're also real stories of true life heroism alongside of true life crime.
Benjamin, when both you and Connor adapt these books into scripts, do either of you or both of you do your own true crime research to get more into the case that's being covered here?
I mean, the short answer is yes, and we both do. I mean, I think that I've been involved in a lot of adaptations of true stories, and I think that it's a privilege to be able to do them, but I think it's an obligation to try to understand as much as you can about what actually happened, and be able to, you know, I mean, we all know that we're dramatizing for an hour or an hour and a half, you know, 90 minutes of a movie, which does not do, and to be able to sit there and try to pull out and find, you know, creatively the nuances, but also to be respectful and be able to find those pieces that really kind of honor what really happened. So yeah, we end up doing a bunch of research on our own and pulling the court cases and trying to track down whoever is living and make sure that we can really kind of wrap our head around it. But, you know, we've also have a great starting point because Anne Rule has been so specific about, you know, in her books of really unearthing and finding so much information specifically about the point of view that we have been, you know, so blessed with being able to have it as a point of view, which is really honoring the story and telling the story from the victim's point of view.
Connor, Rose for Her Grave is very interesting because it starts out as person who faces a tragedy. It starts out not as a true crime story, but sort of more of a, you know, after-death romance tale where a person has tragedy in her life, husband dies, single mom finds new love, and the new love turns into, you know, the devil, if you will.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we always try, you know, I think one thing that's interesting about the space for Lifetime movies is that, you know, people have an idea of what that's going to be. You know, they've been around, they are the staple of true crime TV movies, have been for a long time. So with our films, we like to, like, live within that genre, but also find interesting opportunities where we can tee the audience up to either think they know what's going to happen, and then maybe it's different, or we do go down the path, but there's something along that path that, like, deviates from the norm. And, you know, I think this movie falls into both categories in a bit, in the sense of we have a woman who's gone through tragedy, she meets this new guy, and then all of a sudden she's out of the picture, and then there's a new protagonist. And so there's big twists that happen, too, that are things that the audience might not be expecting.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Lifetime's new true crime-inspired made-for-TV movies. One is tomorrow night at 8 p.m. East Pacific Time. That's A Rose for Her Grave, the Randy Ross story. And then the following Saturday night, that's February 25th, it's 12 Desperate Hours, which we're going to talk about next. We've got the two people involved who did both shows. It's executive producers and writers Connor Allen and Benjamin Anderson. They're both with us live from L.A. this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sam, I'm with you live from New York. Good to have you aboard on this Friday afternoon. 50 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Cloudy skies, very gray compared to what we've had all week long during the Big Apple. Could you believe that one day this week we hit 70 degrees? That's right, 70 in mid-February. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's the number you use. For those who are just joining us at the bottom of the hour, it's good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker Tune Radio. We've also got the chat room going, SimonApple04 by name, and we'd love to hear from you either way. Next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, part of our episode Triple Header next week, we will bring you the originator of a TV programming service. It's been around for a couple of years now called DivaBoxOffice.tv. It is a service that presents original programming aimed at the gay and lesbian community. Her name is Kristen Baker, and she also put together a new miniseries that is premiering later this month right here on that service, which is available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Kristen Baker, the founder of DivaBoxOffice.tv, that's coming your way next Friday among our guests, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. When I learned about 12 Desperate Hours, Benjamin, it reminded me, did you ever see the movie The Desperate Hours or read the novel by Joseph Hayes, very famous book in the 1950s?
I have not, but it sounds like it's something that I should.
Great movie with Humphrey Bogart. I think it's one of the most underrated roles. Frederick March is in it as well, who, by the way, played Willie Loman, for those who caught our last half hour, in the film, the original first film version of Death of a Salesman. We'll come to that with our guest from Hello Tomorrow. But it's a hostage tale, which involves a family, where Bogart is the villain, March is the patriarch of the household, and it seems that 12 Desperate Hours is sort of an interesting, not only a true crime adaptation, but also, in a way, is sort of a take on that book and that film.
Go ahead, Connor.
No, by all means, yeah. By the way.
Oh, yeah, I mean, look, there's obviously, there was movies and stories that inspired us to, and be, to tell this story. We looked at, Collateral was a movie that we had always referenced. I mean, partly because we wore the hat of it as producing it as well as writing it. We knew that we were going to have this great story that was going to be contained within a car, for most of it. And so looking at movies that, I mean, in recent time, even like Locke, Stephen Knight movie that he did, just looking for, what made those movies be the types of pressure cookers that you could do in a contained space, and really kind of go down the rabbit hole of being able to find, comps for us to kind of look at and learn from, as well as just look at the story that we had in front of us that, was incredibly fascinating, and being able to reveal that and unravel that in that space. But, I think that we should have talked earlier, because that sounds like something that we should have looked at as well. But, I will be definitely on my queue tonight to look at it.
You know what's really special about both these movies, but certainly is the case for 12 Desperate Hours, especially because it's not a very well-known, it's more of a crime that you didn't hear about that could have been so much worse and wasn't. Is that going back to that theme of victims who are heroes? Is that this movie really fits that category where you have somebody with a gun who charges into a home and takes basically takes this woman prisoner, puts her kids in danger, and right from early on, this mother who's alone with her kids and a gunman puts herself in greater and greater jeopardy in order to protect those around her. And, mm-hmm. Whenever we're doing a movie, especially when it's a true story, true crime, you want to be looking at the world we're living in and having a message. What are people going to take away from this true story? And in this case, mm-hmm. I think we live in a world where there's a gunman story, on the front news pretty much every day. And here's an incredible true story where it didn't make the news because of an incredible act of heroism from this woman who, basically was able to talk the gunman out, basically leaving her home and saying, "Hey, I'll drive you around. Where do you need to go? Get in my car and I'll take you. I'll be your chauffeur with your sticking a gun in my face for the next 12 hours, if you just leave my kids and you get out of my house before my husband comes home, because I think he'll kill him." And then, she drives this guy around and goes through all kinds of harrowing experiences. And, without giving too many spoilers, she saves the freaking day. and, you know, is even willing to put herself in danger to protect her kidnapper. And, like, that's just something this is something we don't hear about in the news, but we should. And I think that's one of the reasons why we really wanted to tell this story.
And, Benjamin, one of the things that makes your movie even more twisty is that, unlike Desperate Hours, both the original film with Humphrey Bogart and Fred Moore, and there was a remake, by the way, with Mickey Rourke playing the Bogart character, is that while this original film and book takes place basically in one place, the house, the home of the family that's involved by the villains, this one starts out that way, but then it becomes a car drama where, as you mentioned earlier, the car, what happens in the car, is becomes sort of the focal point. And I'm curious how that impacts your writing. How do you make the ride, if you will, as thrilling as possible, as unique as possible, and yet not, you know, not come across as, oh, we've seen this before?
I mean, I think that there was two things that you know, we talked about a lot. I mean, from one standpoint, anybody who's listening who writes, you know, we had to really structure it from a technical standpoint, and to make sure that we were constantly building and revealing something that was new, you know, even if it was a subtle nuance, and so that we weren't kind of finding ourselves repeating action or repeating stuff, and so that there didn't feel like a redundancy or a familiarity to what we were doing. But I think that what the movie, and I think the writing, and I was really happy with what we had done, and what it leans on a lot is focusing and really telling the story of these two people and being able to understand where she's coming from on that day, but where she was in her life, and how this experience and putting herself in this jeopardy allowed her to kind of find agency, and we really got to see her arc and take charge of these circumstances and become a version of herself that we're all rooting for, that we could all understand how she could get to this, and how this mom had such this superpower of kind of kindness and understanding, and through that understanding she was able to get through to this guy who was, you know, as we learn from his perspective, is not just a cookie cutter, you know, black hat individual, but, like, there's a reason that he's here today, and, like, there was a lot of things that did not go his way, and we're not trying to separate ourselves from the fact that he is a bad guy. He took people's lives, and he was, you know, punished and put away for all of those things, but to understand and to get to understand through her eyes where he was coming from allowed the movie to really kind of sit there, and we could not only feel on an emotional level and understand things, but it allowed to inform the kind of constant pressure and tension that we were building towards on a technical basis. And I think that it was a little of those two things. Connor, you can say what your thoughts and your own words, but those were a lot of what we were wrestling with to try to put it together, which was fascinating, because we did have a very contained space that, you know, you sit there and go, we're just driving. How do we keep this interesting, and how do we keep the pressure cooking on this story?
You are hearing the executive producers and writers of Lifetime's upcoming made-for-TV true crime films. The first one is tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, A Rose for Her Grave, the Randy Ross story. And then 1 week later, same time and place, next Saturday night, 12 Desperate Hours. We're speaking with Connor Rowan and Benjamin Anderson live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. The question or comment are many minutes with them. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Takeaway of the week coming up before we leave you at the top of the hour. And don't forget, next Tuesday, not Monday, Tuesday, the first of our three-episode triple-header week shows, we will have, and I think it's very, very special, we'll have What You Need to Know About Peacock's New Service, Must Shop TV, with NBC Universal Senior Vice President Evan Moore and the Chief Revenue Officer of KRV Interactive, the folks doing the application, Jay Wolf. It is a segment you do not want to miss. This could be the break open of a major new arena for television, interactive commerce, where it's all done on the TV set with your voice or voice remote or body gesture, not with a second screen, not with a QR code. So be with us for everything you know about Peacock's upcoming Must Shop TV. That's Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tamavi Television. I promise you, it is going to be a blockbuster. As you know, both of you know, Lifetime has really pioneered having women the opportunity to direct these movies, whatever the subject matter is. And for The Rose for a Grave, you've got Mariette Goh. And for 12 Desperate Hours, you've got the very celebrated and sometimes very controversial actress Gina Gershon making her debut as a movie director for movies or television. What was it like working with both of them?
Go ahead, Connor. Just as a kind of a caveat, as we are a writing pair and a producing pair, you know, we worked a lot together, but on these movies, we also worked, Connor covered set for Desperate Hour, 12 Desperate Hours, and I did for A Rose for a Grave. Working with Marite, it was wonderful, and she actually her husband is her DP, and you know it's fascinating to watch kind of couples who work in the business and how that can really bring a level of artistry and can be very additive to a situation, and it very much was for our experience with her and her husband Brody. I think that Marite, you know, what was really captivating when we first started talking to her in Los Angeles was, you know, I mean, I think that it's the same for casting. It's that, you know, you're looking for someone who shares a vision and might add to it in what you're trying to do. And when you come along those people and they perform and they show you what they can do as an actor, or you see someone and you hear a director's insight and what they want to do with the film, and in this case that we're producing, but also have written it, and we really knew that we were in good hands and found someone who shared what we really wanted to see with the movie, and they brought a lot, and she brought a lot to, you know, bringing out those performances and finding what is, you know, in a tight schedule, in a 16-day schedule, maximizing everything that she could and really drawing performances and planning her day to be able to, you know, bring what I think is a really quality movie and kind of exceeded our expectations of what we know is a difficult schedule. So, you know, I was really pleased every day with working with her, and I think that she's a tremendous talent.
You know, sometimes for movies that are made for television, you know, there isn't an opportunity to like have the directorial flourishes. But she had such a vision coming into it, and she's so smart in how she uses her resources of time and actors and music and, you know, the thoughtfulness of her direction to be able to have a movie that really has that like cinematic edge to it, where she could double click on, you know, psychological aspects or moments in the movie and reach out and touch the audience through what she was doing on the screen. And I think, you know, my hat's off to her. As writers, all, you know, you have your own imagination of what's on the page, and then you really find somebody and you hope that they, you know, can execute it. And I think in the case of both these directors, they were able to not only like execute what we were hoping for on the page, but also, you know, kick it into an even higher gear. That was really exciting for us to see them doing it and say, oh, okay, cool. We didn't even think of that. You know, this is great. That's always amazing.
I always felt
Gina, the original made for TV movies, continues tomorrow night with A Rose for Her Grave, the Randy Roth story. That's tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time. And then the following Saturday night, same time and place, it's 12 Desperate Hours, directed by Gina Gershon. Check your local news where Lifetime is available in your area on cable and satellite, and someplace also available on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. For more details about both movies and the service online, go to www.mylifetime.com. at www.mylifetime.com. A Rose for a Grave, the Randy Ross story, then 12 Desperate Hours. That's the next two Saturday nights starting tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Lifetime Television. Connor Allen, Benjamin Anderson, thank you both very much for coming on. Good luck with both movies over the next two Saturdays, and we'd love to have you back as you do more great stuff in television. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. It's been great. And, you know, I'll go and I'm going to go watch Desperate Hours tonight. So thank you for the recommendation.
I think you really enjoyed it. It's a wonderful film. I think Bogart gives one of his best performances. So does Frederick Marks. So does the entire cast. Really, really great. Both of you take care. Have a superb weekend.
All right, you too.
Bye. Hope everyone enjoys the movie. Bye.
Connor Allen and Benjamin Anderson joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our regular Friday feature, the Takeaway of the Week, where we showcase a development or two that we think you'll take away from the week as impacting the future of television. And today it's all about post-Super Bowl reaction to those multi-hour pregame shows. First of all, I want to say, and I said this on Sports News Wire on Wednesday, I thought Fox did a great job with the game itself. Kevin Burkhart, marvelous on play-by-play. Greg Olsen, even better on commentary. Mike Ferrero with the rules. And also wonderful camera work and A++ graphics. Where Fox, unfortunately, went the wrong way was the pregame show. You don't need 5 hours to cover one game. It's a different thing for a college game day on ESPN or a Fox NFL kickoff to do a bunch of games from different conferences for 2 or 3 hours. But when you do 5 hours on one game, it's way too much. It got and it doesn't get as many people as the 113 million people that saw the Super Bowl game and the Rihanna halftime show, which I thought Fox did a great job in terms of covering as well. So here's what needs to get done. Very simple. It's time to cut these pregame shows down to size. 60 minutes, 90 minutes should do the trick. That's it. And CBS, which gets the game next year, should definitely take that advice and make it happen. Also, something else. We waited too long for the game to start. Waiting 43 minutes from 6 o'clock on for the game to start? It was boring. Too many opening ceremony things, then commercial breaks after each one, and that Bradley Cooper thing right after the last commercial break before the game started, who cares? We didn't need it. So Fox and everybody else, let's cut these Super Bowl pregame shows down to size, and let's see if we can start the game like 6 o'clock, 6:15 at the latest. Thanks to both of our dynamic duos for being with us this hour on Tubarbie Televised. All of you for tuning in. Remember, coming up on Tuesday, our very special segment on Peacock's Must Shop TV with Evan Moore from NBC Universal and Jay Wolf from KRB Interactive. Do not miss. Tell your friends to tune in as well. Came in late on today's program. Want to catch up an episode you missed? Go to the homepage. Check out our podcast site and our website. Tomorrow will be televised on podium.com. Remember, we love hearing from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find us on Facebook, Bing, and Twitter. However you respond, we respond back to you because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. Now, those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Toe is B-Charge General Manager. Jay Soderberg is Head of Content. Website served by On Podium, the Internet's big podcast outpost. Guitarist Bacon is our web coordinator. Tomorrow we televised. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic President's Day weekend. We're back on Tuesday, not Monday, Tuesday, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you're doing between now and next Tuesday afternoon, please make it safe. Have a great time with your family and those you love. And, of course, make it great. Absolutely. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned. And go Tiger!